The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larissa Biggers for North Carolina Reading Service, and this is poetry. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Sylvia Plath's book of poetry, Ariel. Sylvia Plath, born in 1832, was a gifted American poet, novelist, and short story writer known for her personal and confessional style. Her work explores themes of mental illness, death, and motherhood. Plath herself struggled with depression. She graduated from Smith College and later attended Cambridge University. In 1956, she married British poet Ted Hughes. They had two daughters, but their relationship was turbulent, and they separated in 1962. Plath's most well-known works, including the novel The Bell Jar and the poetry collection Ariel, were written shortly before her death by suicide in 1963, and they earned her a Pulitzer Prize after her death. The poems I will be reading today are taken from Ariel. The first poem I'm going to read is called The Applicant. The Applicant. First, are you our sort of person? Do you wear a glass eye, false teeth, or a crutch? A brace or a hook, rubber breast or rubber crotch? Stitches to show something's missing? No. No, then how can we give you a thing? Stop crying. Open your hand. Empty? Empty? Here is a hand to fill it, and willing to bring teacups and roll away headaches and do whatever you tell it. Will you marry it? It is guaranteed to thumb shut your eyes at the end and dissolve of sorrow. We make new stock from the salt. I notice you're stark naked. How about this suit? Black and stiff, but not a bad fit. Will you marry it? It is waterproof, shatterproof, proof against fire and bombs through the roof. Believe me, they'll bury you in it. Now your hand, excuse me, now your head, excuse me, is empty. I have the ticket for that. Come here, sweetie, out of the closet. Well, what do you think of that? Naked as paper to start, but in 25 years she'll be silver, and 50, gold. A living doll everywhere you look. It can sew, it can cook, it can talk. It works, there's nothing wrong with it. You have a hole, it's a poultice. You have an eye, it's an image. My boy, it's your last resort. Will you marry it, marry it, marry it? The next poem I'm going to read is called Lady Lazarus. Lady Lazarus. I've done it again. 1 year in every 10 I manage it, a sort of walking miracle. My skin bright as a Nazi lampshade, my right foot a paperweight, my face a featureless fine Jew linen. Peel off the napkin, oh my enemy, do I terrify? The nose, the eye pits, the full set of teeth, the sour breath will vanish in a day. Soon, soon the flesh, the grave Kate ate, the grave cave eight will be at home on me. And I am a smiling woman. I'm only 30. And like the cat, I have 9 times left to die. This is number 3. What a trash to annihilate each decade. What a million filaments. The peanut crunching crowd shoves in to see them unwrap me hand and foot. The big strip tease. Gentlemen, ladies, these are my hands, my knees. Or maybe skin and bone. Nevertheless, I am the same identical woman the first time. The first time it happened, I was 10. It was an accident. The second time, I meant to last it out and not come back at all. I rocked shut as a seashell, and they had to call and call and pick the worms off me like sticky pearls. Dying is an art like everything else. I do it exceptionally well. I do it so it feels like hell. I do it so it feels real. I guess you could say I've got a call. It's easy enough to do it in a cell. It's easy enough to do it and stay put. It's a theatrical comeback in broad day to the same place, the same face, the same brute amused shout, a miracle that knocks me out. There's a charge for the eyeing of my scars. There's a charge for the hearing of my heart. It really goes. And there's a charge, a very late charge for a word, excuse me, and there's a charge, a very large charge for a word or a touch or a bit of blood or a piece of my hair or my clothes. So, so, Herr Doctor, so, Herr Enemy. I'm your opus. I'm your valuable, the pure gold baby that melts to a shriek. I turn and burn. Do not think I underestimate your great concern. Ash, ash, you poke and stir. Flesh, bone, there's nothing there. A cake of soap, a wedding ring, a gold filling. Herr God, Herr Lucifer, beware, beware. Out of the ash I rise with my red hair, and I eat men like air. The next poem I'm going to read is called Tulips. Tulips. The tulips are too excitable. It is winter here. Look how white everything is, how quiet, how snowed in. I'm learning peacefulness, lying by myself quietly as the light lies on these white walls, this bed, these hands. I'm nobody. I have nothing to do with explosions. I've given my name and my day clothes up to the nurses and my history to the anesthesiologist and my body to the surgeons. They have propped my head between the pillow and the sheet cuff like an eye between two white lids that will not shut. Stupid pupil. It has to take everything in. The nurses pass and pass. They're no trouble. They pass the way gulls pass inland in their white caps, doing things with their hands, one just the same as another. So it is impossible to tell how many there are. My body is a pebble to them. They tend it as water tends to the pebbles that must run over, smoothing them gently. They bring me numbness and their bright needles. They bring me sleep. Now I have lost myself. I am sick of baggage, my patent leather overnight case like a black pillbox, my husband and child smiling out of the family photo, their smiles catch onto my skin, little smiling hooks. I have let things slip, a 30-year-old cargo boat stubbornly hanging on to my name and address. They have swabbed me clear of my loving associations, scared and bare on the green plastic pillowed trolley. I watch my tea set. My bureaus of linen, my books sink out of sight, and the water went over my head. I'm a nun now. I've never been so pure. I didn't want any flowers. I only wanted to lie with my hands turned up and be utterly empty. How free it is. You have no idea how free. The peacefulness is so big, it dazes you, and it asks nothing. A name tag, a few trinkets. It is with the dead clothes on, finally. I imagine them shutting their mouths on it like the communion tablet. The tulips are too red in the first place. They hurt me. Even through the gift paper, I could hear them breathe lightly through their white swaddlings like an awful baby. Their redness talks to my wound. It corresponds. They are subtle. They seem to float, though they weigh me down, upsetting me with their sudden tongues and their color, a dozen red lead sinkers round my neck. Nobody watched me before. Now I'm watched. The tulips turn to me, the windows behind me, where once a day light slowly widens and slowly thins, and I see myself, flat, ridiculous, a cut paper shadow between the eye of the sun and the eyes of the tulips, and I have no face. I've wanted to efface myself. The vivid tulips eat my oxygen. Before they came, the air was calm enough, coming and going, breath by breath, without any fuss. Then the tulips filled it up like a loud noise. Now the air snaps and eddies round them, the way a river snags and eddies round a sunken, rust-red engine. They concentrate my attention, that was happy, playing and resting without committing itself. The walls also seem to be warming themselves. The tulips should be behind bars like dangerous animals. They're opening like the mouth of some great African cat. And I'm aware of my heart. It opens and closes its bowl of red blooms out of sheer love of me. The water I taste is warm and salt like the sea and comes from a country far away as health. This poem is called The Moon and the Yew Tree. The Moon and the Yew Tree. This is the light of mind, cold and planetary. The trees of the mind are black. The light is blue. The grasses unload their griefs at my feet as if I were God, prickling my ankles and murmuring out of their humility. fumy, spiritous mist inhabit this place, separated from my house by a row of headstones. I simply cannot see where there is to get to. The moon is no door. It is a face in its own right, white as a knuckle and terribly upset. It drags the sea after it like a dark crime. It is quiet with the O-gape in complete despair. I live here. Twice on Sundays, the bells startle the sky, eight great tongues affirming the resurrection. At the end, they soberly bong out their names. The yew tree points up. It has a Gothic shape. The eyes lift after it and find the moon. The moon is my mother. She's not sweet like Mary. Her blue garments unloose small bats and owls. How I would like to believe in tenderness, the face of the effigy, gentled by candles, bending on me in particular, its mild eyes. I've fallen a long way. Clouds are flowering, blue and mystical over the face of the stars. Inside the church, the saints will all be blue, floating on their delicate feet over cold pews, their hands and faces stiff with holiness. The moon sees nothing of this. She is bald and wild, and the message of the yew tree is blackness, blackness and silence. This poem is called A Birthday Present. A birthday present. What is this behind the veil? Is it ugly? Is it beautiful? Is it shimmering? Has it breasts? Has it edges? I'm sure it's unique. I'm sure it's what I want. When I'm quiet at my cooking, I feel it looking. I feel it thinking. Is this the one I am to appear for? Is this the elect one, the one with the black eye pits and a scar? Measuring the flour, cutting off the surplus, adhering to rules. Is this the one for the Annunciation? My God, what a laugh. But it shimmers. It does not stop, and I think it wants me. I would not mind if it were bones or a pearl button. I do not want much of a present anyway, this year. I am alive, after all, only by accident. I would have killed myself gladly that time any possible way. Now there are these veils shimmering like curtains, the diaphanous satins of a January window, white as baby's bedding and glittering with dead breath. Oh, ivory. It must be a tusk there, a ghost column. Can you not see? I do not mind what it is. Can you not give it to me? Do not be ashamed. I do not mind if it is small. Do not be mean. I'm ready for enormity. Let us sit down to it, one on either side, admiring the gleam, the glaze, the mirrory variety of it. Let us eat our last supper at it, like a hospital plate. I know why you will not give it to me. You are terrified the world will go up in a shriek, and your head with it, bossed brazen, an antique shield, a marvel to your great-grandchildren. Do not be afraid. It is not so. I will only take it and go aside quietly. You will not even hear me opening it. No paper crackle, no falling ribbons, no scream at the end. I do not think you credit me with this discretion. If you only knew how the veils were killing my days. But to you, they're only transparencies, clear air. But my God, the clouds are like cotton, armies of them. They are carbon monoxide. Sweetly, sweetly, I breathe in, filling my vein with invisibles, with the million probable motes that tick off the years of my life. You're silver suited for the occasion, oh adding machine. Is it possible for you to let something go and have it go whole? Must you stamp each piece purple? Must you kill what you can? There's one thing I want today, and only you can give it to me. It stands at my window, big as the sky. It breathes from my sheets, the cold, dead center, where split lives congeal and stiffen to history. Let it not come by mail, finger by finger. Let it not come by word of mouth. I should be 60 by the time the whole of it was delivered and too numb to use it. Only let down the veil. The veil, the veil. If it were death, I would admire the deep gravity of it, its timeless eyes. I would know you were serious. There would be a nobility then. There would be a birthday. And the knife, not carve, but enter, pure and clean as the cry of a baby, and the universe slide from my side. The next poem is called The Rival. The Rival. If the moon smiled, she would resemble you. You leave the same impression of something beautiful but annihilating. Both of you are great light borrowers. Her O mouth grieves at the world. Yours is unaffected. And your first gift is making stone out of everything. I wake to a mausoleum. You are here, ticking your fingers on the marble table, looking for cigarettes, spiteful as a woman, but not so nervous, and dying to say something unanswerable. The moon, too, abuses her subjects, but in the daytime she is ridiculous. Your dissatisfactions, on the other hand, arrive through the mail slot with loving regularity, white and blank, expansive as carbon monoxide. No day is safe from news of you, walking about in Africa, maybe, but thinking of me. This poem is called The Bee Meeting. The Bee Meeting. Who are these people at the bridge to meet me? They are the villagers, the rector, the midwife, the sexton, the agent for bees. In my sleeveless summery dress, I have no protection, and they are all gloved and covered. Why did nobody tell me? They're smiling and taking out veils tacked to ancient hats. I am nude as a chicken neck. Does nobody love me? Yes, here is the Secretary of Bees with her white shop smock, buttoning the cuffs at my wrist and the slit from my neck to my knees. Now I am milkweed silk. The bees will not notice. They will not smell my fear, my fear, my fear. Which is the rector now? Is that the man in black? Which is the midwife? Is that her blue coat? Everybody is nodding a square black head. There are knights in visors, breastplates of cheesecloth knotted under the armpits. Their smiles and their voices are changing. I'm led through a bean field. Strips of tinfoil winking like people, feather dusters fanning their hands in a sea of bean flowers, creamy bean flowers with black eyes and leaves like bored hearts. Is it blood clots the tendrils are dragging up that string? No, no, it is scarlet flowers that will one day be edible. Now they are giving me a fashionable white straw Italian hat and a black veil that molds to my face. They are making me one of them. They are leading me to the shorn grove, the circle of hives. Is it the hawthorn that smells so sick? The barren body of hawthorn etherizing its children. Is it some operation that is taking place? Is it the surgeon my neighbors are waiting for? This apparition in a green helmet, shining gloves, and white suit. Is it the butcher, the grocer, the postman? Someone I know? I cannot run. I am rooted, and the gorse hurts me with its yellow purses, its spiky armory. I could not run without having to run forever. The white hive is snug as a virgin, sealing off her brood cells, her honey, and quietly humming. Smoke rolls and scarves in the grove. The mind of the hives thinks this is the end of everything. Here they come, the outriders, on their hysterical elastics. If I stand very still, they will think I am cow parsley, a gullible head untouched by their animosity. Not even nodding, a personage in a hedgerow. The villagers open the chambers. They are hunting the queen. Is she hiding? Is she eating honey? She is very clever. She is old, old, old. She must live another year, and she knows it. While in their finger joint cells, the new versions dream of a duel they will win inevitably. A curtain of wax dividing them from the bride flight, the uplift of the murderess into a heaven that loves her. The villagers are moving the virgins. There will be no killing. The old queen does not show herself. Is she so ungrateful? I am exhausted. I am exhausted. Pillar of white and a blackout of knives. I am the magician's girl who does not flinch. The villagers are untying their disguises. They are shaking hands. Whose is that long white box in the grove? What have they accomplished? Why am I cold? This poem is called Stings. Stings. Barehanded, I hand the combs. The man in white smiles barehanded. Our cheesecloth gauntlets neat and sweet. The throats of our wrist brave lily. The throats of our wrist brave lilies. He and I have 1,000 clean cells between us, 8 combs of yellow cups, and a hive itself, a teacup, white with pink flowers on it, With excessive love, I enameled it, thinking, sweetness, sweetness. Brood cells gray as the fossils of shells terrify me. They seem so old. What am I buying? Wormy mahogany? Is there any queen at all in it? If she is there, she is old. Her wings torn shawls, her long body rubbed of its plush, poor and bare and unqueenly and even shameful. I stand in a column of winged, unmiraculous women, honey drudgers. I am no drudge, though for years I have eaten dust and dried plates with my dense hair, and seen my strangeness evaporate, blue dew from dangerous skin. Will they hate me, these women who only scurry, whose news is the open cherry, the open clover? It is almost over. I am in control. Here is my honey machine. It will work without thinking, opening in spring like an industrious virgin to scour the creaming crest of the moon for its ivory powers, scours the sea. A third person is watching. He has nothing to do with the bee seller or with me. Now he is gone, and 8 great bounds, a great scapegoat. Here is his slipper, here is another, and here is the square of white linen he wore instead of a hat. He was sweet, the sweat of his efforts, a rain, tugging the world to fruit. The bees found him out, molding onto his lips like lies, complicating his features. They thought death was worth it, but I have a self to recover, a queen. Is she dead? Is she sleeping? Where has she been with her lion-red body, her wings of glass? Now she is flying, more terrible than she ever was. Red scar in the sky, red comet over the engine that killed her, the mausoleum, the wax house. The next poem is called Wintering. Wintering. This is the easy time. There is nothing doing. I have whirled the midwife's extractor. I have my honey, 6 jars of it, 6 cat's eyes in the wine cellar, wintering in a dark without a window at the heart of the house, next to the last tenant's rancid jam and the bottles of empty glitters, Sir So-and-so's gin. This is the room I have never been in. This is the room I could never breathe in, the black hunched in there like a bat, no light, but the torch in its faint Chinese yellow on appalling objects. Black, assassiny, decay, possession. It is me who owns them, neither cruel nor indifferent, only ignorant. This is a time of hanging on for the bees so slow I hardly know them, filing like soldiers up to the syrup tin to make up for the honey I've taken. Tate and Lyle keeps them going, the refined snow. It is Tate and Lyle they live on instead of flowers. They take it. The cold sets in. Now they ball in a mass, black mind against all that white. The smile of the snow is white. It spreads itself out a mile long body of mycine, into which on warm days it can only carry their dead. The bees are all women, maids and the long royal lady. They have got rid of the men, the blunt, clumsy stumblers, the boors. Winter is for women. The woman, still sitting at her knitting at the cradle of the Spanish walnut, her body a bulb in the cold and too dumb to think. Will the hive survive? Will the gladiolas succeed in banking their fires to enter another year? What will they taste of, the Christmas roses? The bees are flying. They taste the spring. This poem is called The Munich Mannequins. The Munich Mannequins. Perfection is terrible. It cannot have children. Cold as snow breath, it tamps the womb where the yew tree blows like hydras, the tree of life and the tree of life, unloosing their moons month after month to no purpose. The blood flow is a flood of love. The blood flood is a flood of love, the absolute sacrifice. It means no more idols but me. Me and you, so, in their sulfur loveliness, in their smiles, these mannequins lean tonight in Munich, morgue between Paris and Rome, naked and bald in their furs, orange lollies on silver sticks. Intolerable, without mind, the snow drops its pieces of darkness. Nobody's about. In the hotels, hands will be opening doors and setting down shoes for a polish of carbon, into which broad toes will go tomorrow. Oh, the domesticity of these windows, the baby lace, the green leaf confectionery, the thick Germans slumbering in their bottomless stolts, and the black phones on hooks glittering and digesting, voiceless. The snow has no voice. The next poem is called Paralytic. Paralytic. It happens. Will it go on? My mind is a rock, no fingers to grip, no tongue. My God, the iron lung that loves me pumps my two dust bags in and out, will not let me relapse while the day outside glides by like ticker tape. The night brings violets, tapestries of eyes, lights, the soft, anonymous talkers. You all right? The starched, inaccessible breast. Dead egg, I lie whole on a whole world I cannot touch, at the white, tight drum of my sleeping couch. Photographs visit me. My wife, dead and flat in 1920s furs, mouth full of pearls. Two girls as flat as she who whisper, "We are your daughters." The still waters wrap my lips, eyes, nose, and ears, a clear cellophane I cannot crack. On my bare back I smile, a Buddha, all wants, desires, falling from me like rings hugging their lights. The claw of the magnolia, drunk on its own scents, asks nothing of life. This poem is called Balloons. Balloons. Since Christmas, they have lived with us, guileless and clear, oval soul animals taking up half the space, moving and rubbing on the silk invisible air drifts, giving a shriek and a pop when attacked, then scooting to rest, barely trembling, yellow cat head, blue fish. Such queer moons we live with instead of dead furniture. Straw mats, white walls, and these traveling globes of thin air, red, green, delighting the heart like wishes or free peacocks blessing old ground with a feather beaten in starry metals. Your small brother is making his balloon squeak like a cat, seeming to see a funny pink world he might eat on the other side of it. He bites. Then he sits back, fat jug, contemplating the world clear as water, a red shred in his little fist. The last poem I'll read today is called Kindness. Kindness. Kindness glides about my house. Dame Kindness, she is so nice. The blue and red jewels of her rings smoke in the windows. The mirrors are filling with smiles. What is so real as the cry of a child? A rabbit's cry may be wilder, but it has no soul. Sugar can cure everything, so Kindness says. Sugar is a necessary fluid, its crystals, a little poultice. Oh, Kindness, Kindness, sweetly picking up pieces. My Japanese silks, desperate butterflies, may be pinned any minute, anesthetize. And here you come with a cup of tea, wreathed in steam. The blood jet is poetry. There is no stopping it. You hand me two children, two roses. We've run out of time for today's episode of poetry. We hope you've enjoyed it. Again, the poems I read today are taken from Sylvia Plath's Ariel, published in 1963. I'm Larissa Biggers, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The